Hi, I'm Kenny.
And this is Monica.
And you're listening to Questioning Faith,
a podcast where we discuss our journey with the Christian faith.
In today's episode, Righteous Lot, we discuss the biblical breakdown of righteousness and wickedness by looking specifically at the story of Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right. We see a difference between biblical definitions and cultural definitions, and it gets a little bit murky.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal because it matters. Your salvation and eternal soul goes one direction or the other, depending on how you get labeled.
Yeah. And we're trying something a little bit different with this episode, I think.
Right.
We're actually kind of jumping into a specific Bible story and kind of trying to pick it apart and understand what is being taught, talking about the way we used to discuss this story, and then also kind of bringing our current perspective to it.
Right, so let us know what you think about it, and maybe we can do more Bible stories in the future.
The writer of 2 Peter declares that the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. And this is a common theme throughout the Bible.
Mm-hmm. That he's going to treat his people one way and then the ungodly another. So that's like his standard for treatment.
Right. That he distinguishes between the righteous and the wicked. The righteous he uplifts. The righteous he saves. The wicked he punishes. He damns to hell. He destroys the wicked.
Right.
How does the God of the Bible distinguish between the righteous and the wicked?
Now, how does he decide who's godly and who's ungodly?
Right. Who gets to be saved and who gets to be punished?
Right. I guess culturally, we, and I maybe even used to think before I became fervent in studying the text in the Bible, is that God kind of knew everybody's heart in that they were trying to do good, trying to be loving, helping each other, serving each other. And then there were the wicked who were like the murderers and the rapists and the thieves and who were trying to do harm. Like it was more about a person's intrinsic desires and goals and then their actions pouring out of that about who was a quote unquote good person and a bad person, righteous and wicked. And even though the righteous person might make mistakes, overall, they're trying to do good for humanity. And so that was just kind of a cultural righteous and wicked kind of mindset.
I guess I grew up thinking, I guess a little bit similar, but was also taught that even rapists and murderers and people who commit terrible crimes can still be saved.
Right. They can still achieve the label of righteous.
Right.
Because to be saved, you have to have that label of being righteous.
So it didn't just rely on what they did.
Right. It was more than that.
Which is what we hear from Christians all the time today.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was things that we used to say is that it's not about your actions. It's about your heart. It's about what you believe. I mean, that's Hebrews, right? That's the argument the writer of Hebrews makes, that what makes people righteous, what brings people into the salvation and the rest of heaven, is their faith in God and in the work of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue it's not as simple as just saying that and covering it over like that. Not when we look at the rest of the Bible.
Yeah, when we look at the text as a whole, it seems to flip back and forth from you're righteous if you have belief to you're righteous if you have God's law, if you're following in obedience, or you're wicked if you do horrible things, or you're wicked if you don't have belief. Like, it switches back and forth regularly. And then the theology is just kind of justified depending on the story.
Well, yeah, but even within a single story, there seems to be a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the story of Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, where it's sometimes using the cultural definition of what we would say is wicked and righteous with good behavior and bad behavior, and then sometimes it, like a light switch, it turns on to belief and not belief.
Or just being of the right people, even.
Right, or even, yeah, the right bloodline.
Which seems to be the case of Lot. Lot is righteous. All right, so according to 2 Peter, right, Lot was counted as righteous, and that he was tormenting his soul as he saw the unlawful deeds of the Sodomites.
Right, which a couple of things there. It's interesting that they use the phrase unlawful in 2 Peter because Lot is long before Moses. And so the Mosaic law is not even given yet. So it's almost like 2 Peter is written after the fact and it's going back and retroactively fitting in Lot believing that these people are lawless.
Which, I mean, of course it is, right? I mean, all of these were written, I mean, long after these events would have taken place if they even took place, which is unlikely.
Right.
So, of course, the writers, whose intent was to at least some of their intent was to uphold and propagandize the law,
mm-hmm.
and say, look, like, let's hold to the Jewish law, let's be Jewish, let's do these things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they're going to mention the law throughout their writings. Right.
But Lot's tormenting himself, living among these people who are lawless, and presumably, like, acting, how we would say, culturally wicked, harming each other.
The story of Lot, we get some clear descriptions of what the wicked look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lot kind of muddies the water.
Right. I had grown up hearing that story my whole life, but there are a lot of details to the story that are a lot less known that might fall through the cracks.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it starts with Abraham, and Abraham's talking with God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God is in physical form, apparently, and is there with Abraham. He had brought along two angels, and he sends these two angels along down to Sodom. And the reason why he sent those angels down to Sodom, it says this is Genesis 18, is because he had heard an outcry from Sodom.
Yeah, and it's interesting language because it says he needs to go check it out to see if the outcry is legit. It's a weird personification of God, at the very least, if not just an outright contradiction of God's omnipotence.
Right. He's heard an outcry and he's sending two angels down there.
Yeah.
To do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to decide whether to tell Abraham about it, because Abraham is his chosen one. And it's Abraham's line that will bring salvation to the world and all of that.
Right. Yeah, that's the promise.
So he eventually decides to tell Abraham and tells Abraham about it. And Abraham's response is one that gets at the heart of this question of the way God treats the righteous versus the way he treats the wicked. In fact, Abraham says, surely the judge of all the world knows how to distinguish between the righteous and the wicked and will not punish the righteous along with the wicked.
Yeah.
So he like does this like bargaining thing with God, and he starts with like 50 people. If there are 50 righteous in the city, are you still going to destroy it?
And then if there are 40 or they're 30, and God's like, no, not if there's this many, not if there's this many. And then he gets all the way down to 10, and then Abraham seems appeased.
Yeah, God's like, yeah, if there are 10 righteous people in the city,
I'll save the whole city.
Then it cuts to the angels walking into Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
We get our cutscene, and we're now in Sodom. The angels are there, and they run into Lot. And they're like, we're going to sleep in the town square. And Lot's like, nah, that's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't sleep in the town square. So he invites them to stay with him. And we find out why it was a bad idea, because all the men in the city come to Lot's door that night and demand that Lot give them the angels so they can rape them. And so we are now seeing, right, like an example of that wickedness.
Right. But it's about the men in the city.
Right. It doesn't mention, typical for this kind of literature that's very patriarchal, very much only concerned with the actions of men.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mention the women. Doesn't mention the children. It's just the men.
Yeah, and they are doing this horrible thing, wanting to rape these male angels, which I guess is where we get sodomize from.
Well, if they're male angels, I mean,
yeah, I guess you don't really know.
I mean, angels are angels, right?
Right.
There's no declaration of the sex of angels. In fact, do angels reproduce? Like, that's a...
Yeah, that's true.
It's a strange thing for us to assume that angels must be male.
That's true. I don't even know why I pictured them as male.
I think that probably falls in with that patriarchal kind of teaching. Like,
I'm part of the system.
Yeah. But, like, all of the active characters of the Bible, or at least the vast majority of the active characters of the Bible, are male.
Right.
So we just, angels must be male, too.
Yeah.
But angels aren't human. Angels aren't even earthly beings, and so... Mm-hmm.
They must have looked beautiful, though, because all the men wanted her. It. So then what Lot does is, he's like, no, you can't have these angels. That would be wrong.
It's wrong.
Because
they're
he's
guests.
Righteous.
Yeah.
So instead, he's like, have my two virgin daughters to rape.
Yeah.
And it's like,
wait, what?
Yeah.
That's your solution? Like, that you say, no, what you're going to do is wrong. You attacking my guests is wrong. But whatever you want with my two virgin daughters.
Yeah. But I guess they weren't as pretty or as desirable or something as these angels, because they're like, nah.
We don't want
and
that.
And they kept trying to force in to the get the angels. And then I guess the angels save the day and like blind everybody, and then they escape.
Right. And they leave the city.
But who escapes? You know, it's like the Bible says that it's Lot that's righteous, but Lot gets to leave with his wife and his daughters, and we never hear anything about the wife or the daughters being righteous, but they're getting to leave.
Right.
And then, after being told, don't look at this horrible destruction, the wife looks back at the flashing, burning, horrible sounds and screamings that are coming,
I mean,
or like whatever.
This is just utter destruction, right? I mean,
right.
There are multiple references throughout the Bible to this incident that...
It's horrible.
Fire and brimstone poured down upon these two cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely laid waste. So it must be something incredible. Mm-hmm. Must sound incredible. Like you mentioned, there must be bright lights going, you know, like all sorts of things. So, of course you're going to look.
Yeah, but she did, and so she's turned into a pillar of salt. But then I find it striking about the story now, as an adult woman, is like these daughters and these women in Lot's life got saved because of his righteousness.
Right.
And all of the women and children in the city got destroyed because of their husband and father's unrighteousness or their wickedness or whatever it, you know, however we define that wickedness.
Yeah.
And so it's once again that patriarchal, misogynistic, you're defined by your male counterpart mm-hmm. mindset.
Yeah. And I certainly wouldn't say, like, just on that level, it seems to be an unfair allotment.
Mm-hmm.
An unfair pouring out of this divine, quote-unquote, justice
mm-hmm.
to destroy these wicked people who are demonstrated by the men's actions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common theme. The Israelites, if we fast forward a few hundred years to when the law has been given and the Israelites are going into their promised land, into Canaan, God tells them to kill everyone in these cities. Men, women, infants, and all of their livestock.
Yeah, most of the time it says that. Sometimes it says except for the virgins. Like sometimes you're allowed to keep the virgin.
You're allowed to keep the virgins. Which, as sex slaves, I guess.
Yeah.
It's an abomination.
Right. Like, it's horrifying.
For us to look at things like that and see that as good, we have to really turn a blind eye to how wicked that is.
I remember thinking, well, the Bible says these people were wicked. Like, the city group was wicked. They were evil. So I think of, when I think of these city groups being destroyed, I think of, like, the men in Sodom. They were...
They deserved it.
They deserved it. And then...
They must have been doing wicked things.
Right. The city was just evil. They were killing each other. They were raping each other. They were making everybody's lives completely miserable within the city. Like, it was just pure evil. Yeah. So I used to think of wicked that way. But it seems in the Bible, when we continue to look at Lot... It was clearly not righteous to offer up his virgin daughters to be raped.
No.
And then it's clearly not righteous what he does next. Like, they head off towards the hills to hide.
Because he's afraid to go into any city at this point.
Right.
And he's terrified. And so he goes and he lives in the hills with his two daughters. His wife's been turned to salt.
Yeah.
And now he's living with his two daughters in a cave or something in the hills.
Yeah, and they must stay there a really long time because the daughters start worrying about their lineage. Like, this is my father's line. He's going to die out and I'm not going to bear children or whatever. So they get him drunk. They're just giving him all this wine until he gets so inebriated that he sleeps with both of them and gets them pregnant.
Yeah.
So that's like many levels of wrong in sleeping with your kid and then becoming a drunkard. So there's these unlawful deeds,
right?
But Lot is still counted as righteous exactly. because of what you said, because of the faith.
Yeah.
But so, really, he's just as lawless.
Yeah, so his actions are not significantly different from the actions
of many other wicked that we see.
Yeah, and so that seems to agree then with the idea that righteousness must be by faith.
Mm-hmm.
But then the flip side of it then would have to be that wickedness, if we're being consistent,
mm-hmm.
that wickedness is lack of faith.
Right. So it wasn't really their lawlessness. Second Peter mentions Lot is righteous and that he mourned for the lawless deeds of these people in Sodom and Gomorrah. So really it wasn't the lawless deeds that were the problem though. Like, he was being judgmental about it, but it wasn't the lawless deeds that were the issue, it was the lack of faith.
Right, but if lack of faith is the reason why they're destroyed, why single out Sodom and Gomorrah?
Right, because most of the world are unbelievers, they've never heard of Yahweh.
Yeah.
And we know that these cities got to continue to exist because populations exist in these remote areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a wipe for unbelief there. And also, that undoes the justification of Israel getting to go into all these towns and completely commit genocide against these wicked people. Like,
right.
Really, even though the text says they're wicked, all that necessarily means is that they don't believe in Yahweh.
Right.
So they could have been perfectly pleasant people, serving each other, loving each other, mm-hmm. treating each other with kindness, but they don't have beliefs, so they deserve to be wiped. It's like radical Islam with infidels and all of these other genocides based on religious wars and stuff.
Yeah, right. Any radical religious war
yeah.
that today every Christian I know would agree is evil and awful.
Yeah, you can't just go wipe out people groups because
they don't believe what yeah. you believe.
And because they don't believe what you believe, that doesn't make them wicked or evil.
Right.
But it's done time and time again.
In the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
So just to continue to kind of drive that point in, and how kind of the Bible seems inconsistent still mm-hmm. with the way it deems who's wicked and who's righteous, where it goes back and forth between having faith and not having faith and doing good, following the law versus not following the law or not doing righteous things.
Mm-hmm.
Later in places like in the prophets, like in Isaiah and Jeremiah, and specifically I'm thinking of Ezekiel, when God is like passing judgment on Jerusalem in Ezekiel 16, he's telling Israel how they have forsaken him and how he had done all of these things for them. And then he accuses them of going and whoring after all of these other gods and worshiping all these other gods. And then he gets to the point where he says, you are like your sister Sodom. So now we have a reference back to this story. And what he says is that Sodom, they deserved their punishment because they didn't love, they weren't caring for people.
Mm.
They were full of bread, like they were wealthy
mm-hmm.
and they were idle, like, and they were just kind of sitting in their wealth and their affluence and just happy with it.
Yeah, so they were simultaneously like wealthy and full of bread and not taking care of all of their poor people, because I guess apparently they still had people they should have been taking care of, so they weren't all wealthy.
Right, and then I think also it says, and for their idolatry.
Right.
Right, so there's a little bit of that they didn't believe in me, they didn't believe in God, the God of Israel,
mm-hmm.
but that is lumped in with all of these actions that they did.
Right.
There, it's actions and non-belief.
Right, it's a combination.
And then I think of places like the Psalms that describe the wicked.
Right. So if the wicked is just those who don't believe, then it makes things like Psalms, like that the wicked are born in lies. All they want to do is lie. And violence covers the wicked's mouth.
Right.
Oh, and then there was that Proverbs one that the fear of the Lord prolongs the days of the righteous, but the wicked's life is shortened.
Right.
And then the wicked do deceitful work and they're jealous. And they're always seeking retribution. And so there's all these like things that it tells us that the wicked are like. That they lie a lot. They're trying to reap retribution.
They murder.
Stealing. They die younger.
And then conversely, there are plenty of places in the Psalms and throughout the Bible that says things about the righteous. That the righteous man walks in the ways of the Lord.
Right.
Not believes in the Lord, but walks in actions. His ways.
Yeah.
Upholds the law of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot about actions throughout the Old Testament that determines righteous and wicked.
Right, even at the very beginning with Cain and Abel, you have Cain and Abel bringing a sacrifice to God, and Abel brings like these fat lambs, and Cain is working the soil, and so he brings like some grains and stuff. And it says that God smiles on Abel's sacrifice, but not on Cain's.
Mm.
And so God talks to Cain after he gets all huffy about it, and says, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted?
Mm.
So it's about actions again
right.
there. So the Bible just, it jumps back and forth. Like it's about belief and unbelief. And then it's about actions, just depending on what benefits the story.
And it's not isolated to the Old Testament, I don't think. Think of places like Ephesians that say things like salvation is by faith, not by works.
Right.
Or saved by grace through faith, not by works.
Mm-hmm.
So that no man may boast.
Right.
So it's only faith. It's not works at all. But then we look at places like 1 John that talk about how if you do not love one another, if you don't take care of one another, then you're not truly saved.
Right.
Places like James true religion is one that takes care of the orphans and the widows.
Yeah, it's the person who acts on the word, not just a hearer only,
right.
is of the real faith or something like that. So what you end up doing, and I remember what I used to do, is, you know, say, well, if a person has real faith, that real faith will cause actions.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is then you have all these people who have genuine belief who still do wicked acts. And so then other Christians are like, well, they don't have real belief then. Or they just don't have enough belief.
Right.
Or they're just in sin, you know, you can't help it. Like, even if you're in the spirit, you still have original sin. So there's all these other hoops you have to jump through
mm-hmm.
because the belief doesn't actually cause good works, because there's no difference between the amount of good a Christian does versus a non-Christian or any other religion.
No, that's like the challenge that Christopher Hitchens used to give.
Right.
Is name one righteous act that you can do as a Christian that is truly good that I can't do as an atheist.
Right.
And then he flips it. He says, all right, now name one evil thing that a religious person can do that
or
has done that wouldn't be done by an atheist.
Right. And there's countless examples.
Examples of mass genocide based on that faith. Right.
Right.
We were just like things we were just talking about, killing the infidels, killing all the non-believers because they don't follow my religion.
Right. The justification of, oh, they're just not a real believer. It's a band-aid for continuing to plug holes for all the mm-hmm. hoops you're having to jump through to make it work that you have to have actions to be righteous.
Right. And it's a moving of the goalposts
throughout
the Bible. It just shifts. Here's what it means to be righteous. Oh, but here's really what it means to be righteous.
Mm-hmm. And it's entangled. Constantly. Yeah, right. It's entangled with the cultural meaning of righteous and wicked.
Exactly. And that, I think, is what has produced, it's something that's contributed, at least, to the production of all of these different denominations of Christianity.
Right.
It's why we have certain sects of Christianity, like Catholicism, that are based around a lot of works and a lot of actions.
Yeah, you have to do confession, you mm-hmm. have to take communion, like there's certain holy days that you need to go to service on that are more important than others. Like there's very specific actions that you need to fulfill or you are in sin.
Right, and then you have other sects, like some evangelical sects or some other Protestant ones that would say, no, it's no works at all. And the fact that you're relying so much on works shows that you're not really Christians.
Right.
Or we can look at things like Church of Christ, you know, who are
You
can't use instruments in church. So it's about certain actions that you cannot do.
Right. Because if you really unpack the text, it's complicated mm-hmm. on what it takes to be righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cherry pick and only go through some, then sure, it seems like if you have faith, then you're saved.
Right, and that cherry picking is really important, I think. What I think we did, and I think that a lot of Christians do regularly, is we settle on our theology. We decide what our theology is,
mm-hmm.
and then we figure out how the Bible supports that theology.
Right.
And that's not fair of me. That's not just Christians. That's not just religious people. That's
political biases and everything.
That's a very human thing to do. Right? We feel this leaning towards a certain belief, a certain morality, a certain whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then we find ways to justify it.
Right.
Our logical self comes along after we've already decided on what the right answer is.
Right, but we can check that because we Absolutely. Know that humans have that natural tendency. And
right.
so since we know that it's there, we can start to try to look at things more objectively and say, okay, what are my feelings about this? And why are my feelings there? Is it real or is it just because mm-hmm. I'm inventing reasons and omitting other things?
Right.
And so it's easily checkable once you're aware of the problem
mm-hmm.
with critical thinking and like challenging the issue.
Absolutely.
But it's a can of worms when you do it.
It sure is.
Because you look at David with Bathsheba. I mean, that's another one. Like, he's considered righteous, but he has people murdered so that he can sleep with a woman.
Yeah, and that's not his only instance of sin.
No, he's like sinful all over the place, but he's still called righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, again, clarifying that righteousness is through faith. Horrible actions follow.
Right.
But then counter that with James, and it's the actions of the faithful will be good.
Right.
And so it just depends on where you're at in the text.
Another interesting thought I have about this story with Sodom is God says he's heard an outcry from Sodom.
Mm.
In the Psalms, it's declared that God only listens to the voice of the righteous.
Right.
He does not hear the wicked.
Mm-hmm.
So that would imply that there are righteous in Sodom who are crying out to God.
Right.
Maybe it's just Lot that's crying out to him. That would certainly be the argument I'd make as a Christian.
Yeah. I remember the series on the righteous versus the wicked.
Mm.
And yeah, that God does not listen to the prayers or the callings of the wicked. And that's interesting because it's like, well, we always say, just pray. Like I remember one of the things being told after leaving the faith is you need to pray about it.
Pray that God would reveal himself to you.
Yeah. But you can't, according to the text, you can't do that because God doesn't hear the prayers of the wicked. Right, he's not going to listen to the prayer of the wicked. You're wicked if you're not of the faith. And so there's no way to break the cycle. And then that goes into Calvinism and Arminianism, which might be a whole other podcast on another day on are you predestined for heaven and designed by God for a certain characteristic, or is there free will involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's another can of worms.
Yeah, huge one. The first one that we ever really discussed.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, we still discuss, but from an atheistic view
on
if humanity has any...
Any will at all?
Any free will, or if we're mechanics and brain.
Yeah. Well, looking at the story of Lot, story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and also considering the vast array of different verses that we talked about today, it doesn't seem like God has a consistent standard for righteousness and wickedness.
It's sometimes based on a person's actions, and it's sometimes based on if they have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's sometimes based on if your bloodline is right, like if you're married to a righteous man, or if your dad is a righteous man, or if you're from the line of Abraham.
Or if you're the child of a wicked person.
Right.
If you're an infant in one of these cities in Canaan, who maybe the adults are wicked,
mm-hmm.
but a wicked infant?
Right.
Like, is a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Or taking it a step further, like these pregnant women who are murdered and slaughtered along with the child growing inside of them.
Yeah. And then the next thing is the people who maybe they were a believer and then they're in a car accident and now they're a completely different personality. Like all it takes is one mm-hmm. blow to the head and it completely changes who a person can be sometimes. Where they start having seizures, mm-hmm. so now surgeons can separate the left and right hemisphere. And then we see a lot of personality shifts and people change their belief systems, or they start taking medicine or get cancer and then become mentally ill, or even born mentally ill. There's all these people, are they righteous or are they wicked because they don't have actions and they don't have belief? It gets murkier and murkier the more that you're willing to think about it and think critically about it.
Right.
The whole system kind of fell apart on me once you start questioning things.
Yeah, I suppose that's the danger of questioning faith. Is
yeah.
It can cause your faith to crumble. It did for us. I don't think it has to for everybody.
No.
So what questions do you think we have for this episode?
I would ask, what do you think it takes for someone to be called righteous?
Or wicked.
Or wicked.
Yeah.
And then does that apply to infants, women, men, each individually, and then mentally handicapped, personality disorders, people who end up, you know, medicated or in car accidents? Like, does it apply across the board or only in general relative terms until you really dig in?
Yeah. Are there exceptions and stuff?
Yes. Yeah. Are there ever any exceptions?
Yeah. What do you think would be a fair way to distinguish between the treatment of the righteous and the wicked? How should God go about deciding who's righteous and who's wicked? And then how should he order his system of punishment? Like, what would be a fair way to do that?
Yeah.
Is the one that is outlined, however murkily outlined in the Bible, the perfect way to do it? Or could you think of a better way, a more consistent, a more just and fair system?
Yeah.
I think we can. I mean, I think that we have. There are plenty of systems in the world that are certainly more fair and more just than the way it's outlined in the Bible.
Yeah, to me, I think you've put it before that eternal punishments for temporal crimes can never really be just.
Yeah. The Bible certainly declares that his standards are fair, that they are mm-hmm. just, right?
But just saying something's just doesn't make it just. We can look at the actions to see if
right.
they are what they claim to be.
Right. I think those two would be great.
Yeah.
So those questions were,
what does it mean to be righteous and wicked for every type of person, no matter their age or gender or mental abilities?
And are there, like, exceptions that go along with that?
Right.
And then can you think of a more just system of reward and punishment than the one that is outlined in the Bible? Thanks for listening to Questioning Faith.
We hope you guys enjoyed it.
If you have any thoughts or questions, you can reach us at KennyandMonicaAskQuestions@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Our next episode will be available on May 19th, but until then, remember,
always ask questions.